You're listening to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
I'm Jared Wadley. In August, the 1996 Welfare Reform Act marked its 10th year of giving states more flexibility to create their own welfare-to-work programs to assist low-income families. Sheldon Danziger, co-director of the University of Michigan National Poverty Center, notes that while reform enabled many to achieve self-sufficiency by moving to work, some families left welfare without finding stable employment.
The 1996 Welfare Reform Act dramatically changed the welfare system for single mothers and their children in this country. Now that it's 10 years later and a lot of research has been done, I think there are four issues that stand out. In some ways, most people believe welfare reform accomplished its major goal, which was to dramatically cut the welfare rolls. And welfare rolls today are only about half what they were 10 years ago, and very few people stay on welfare for long periods of time. On the other hand, while fewer people are on welfare and more single mothers are working, poverty is still very high for this group. It's good to move from welfare to work, but many of the people who move from welfare to work still find themselves poor and rely on food stamps, Medicaid, access to child health insurance, and child care. So another thing we've learned is that it's a very difficult labor market for women and men who have relatively few labor market skills and experiences. So many welfare recipients went from being poor welfare recipients to being working poor and near poor families that still need government assistance. And then there's the unfortunate small group who have become worse off because they no longer get access to cash welfare and they haven't been able to find steady jobs. The good news is that there are more gainers than there are losers, but we haven't, until the 96 law, had a situation where someone who was needy, was willing to work, but couldn't find a job, wouldn't be eligible for cash assistance. And so I think overall there's agreement on these issues: less welfare, more work, somewhat less poverty, smaller group of people who are worse off.
Immigration has been a hotly contested debate this year, especially as it relates to employment. Danziger says controversy surrounds new immigrants who tend to take the lowest paying jobs, often ones that Americans don't want.
Often the issue is that somebody who was born and raised in the U.S. and educated in U.S. system has in mind a kind of working conditions and wages that reflect the U.S. standard of living. Somebody who grows up in Mexico, for example, in a rural area where people have 4 or 5 years of education, where people are working for $5 or $6 a day, with that as their reference point, will think that working in a kitchen for minimum wage, doing dishes in the U.S., or doing hard labor, picking crops, or working in manual labor is a great increase relative to what they've experienced. So they may perceive the wages they're earning as very good, and the fact that they might live in very crowded housing with very little amenities would nonetheless think that they are not poor relative to the people who they left behind when they immigrated to this country. The immigration issue is obviously a very complex one and clearly is a very controversial political issue this year.
So who is going to save the poor? Countries utilize different strategies to tackle this social problem.
America has a very diverse set of institutions, in part because we don't rely on government as much as other countries. So over the last 20 years, most communities have developed homeless shelters, feeding programs. Many of the feeding programs are operated by churches and other nonprofit agencies. You tend not to see that in European countries where the programs are handled directly by government. All of these programs matter to the poor in the U.S. If we had a broader provision of medical care, there would be less need for free clinics. If we had broader provision of nutrition assistance, there would be less need for food pantries. I think what we've seen in the U.S. over the last 20 or so years is a reluctance to have government take a lead role. 40 years ago, President Johnson declared war on poverty and said it was the government's responsibility to move forward. About 10 years ago in England, Prime Minister Blair said it was the government's responsibility, and he launched a very successful anti-poverty program in the United Kingdom. We've not seen the kind of consensus that supported President Johnson's war on poverty or Tony Blair's actions in the UK. So unless we see that in the United States, I think we'll muddle along. When the economy does very well, as it did in the late 90s, we'll get more declines in poverty. When the economy has not grown very well, as has been the case since the recession of 2001, we won't see much change in the poverty rate. And that means in the U.S., the poverty rate will be high. It will be high for African Americans. It will be high for children who live with single mothers. And for all groups, it'll be higher than it is in Canada and Europe.
Danziger believes that it'll take both a stronger economy over several years and increased anti-poverty efforts to significantly reduce poverty in the United States. 37 million Americans live in poverty.
I think if we got a boom in the economy over the next few years, the way we had a boom in the 90s, that would be a very important way to reduce poverty. If the economy continues as it is, poverty is likely to continue to be relatively stagnant. At one point, I thought the response to Hurricane Katrina was going to lead to more government intervention and action. It's a year later and it hasn't. So I'm not very optimistic that we're going to see a lot of new anti-poverty programs and policies.
Danziger is the Henry J. Meyer Distinguished University Professor of Public Policy at the Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy.
This has been a production of the University of Michigan News Service. Visit us on the web at www.umich.edu/news.